Shavua Tov world. A wonderful Motzei Shabbat to all. And today's stuff in Masechet Chulin, brought to you from Yerushalayim Yir HaKodesh, is Daf Mem Daled. So the last thing that we learned was that the problem in Rav's Psak, which we didn't have time really to discuss very much, I just want to make sure that it's clear, that Rav was claiming, the Gemara was claiming that Rav said he's going to be Machmir. Rav, I meant, was going to be Machmir, both like Chumrei de Rav and Chumrei de Shmuel, was a very embarrassing problem, because it says that somebody who does that is Haksil b'choshech olev. So I just want to point out that that din does not mean if you combine certain Kulais of Beis Hillel with certain Chumras of Beis Hillel with certain Chumras of Beis Hillel. It means if you combine contradictory. So, for instance, when it came to the Chisaron B'Shidra that we just had in Machlokas between Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel, in terms of Hakama Chisaron B'Shidra, so it turned out that Beit Hillel ended up being L'Chumra when it came to Treifas, and Beit Shammai turned out, actually, when it came to the Dinim of the original Mishnah, where he said it's only considered to be a chisaron b'shidra if you're missing two vertebrae, he was the one who was l'chumra. If you combine those two shitas and you paskin when it comes to treifas that something is tummy if it's missing one vertebrae, when it comes to tumas meis, something is tummy if it's missing one vertebrae, and when it comes to treifas that something is considered to be chisaron if it's missing one vertebrae, so then you're talking nonsense. Either what we need is to measure the chisaron with one vertebrae or with two. We can't have it both ways in paskin, like the same way in opposite ways when it comes to treifas and when it comes to the dinim of tumas meis. So that's where we have an innate contradiction between what it is that Beit Shammai said on something and what it is that Beit Hillel said on something. There, it's actually aksil b'choshech hilech, and there the Gemara came out. In the end, the lesson that we learned was that actually Rava was going entirely like Rav, because he was going according to the actual way that Rambi Bar Yecheskel explained that Rav had been misquoted by his brother, Reb Yehuda, and that in reality, Rav had said the words, Veshet natnu po chachamim shi'ur. There is a specific distance in which it's considered to be Veshet and a distance where it's not considered to be a Veshet, in which case, the dinim of the Turbats have Veshet, even though he said over there that it has a chumra and that it's going to be a treifa, even if it's just in a kuva b'mashu, like a Veshet. That does not mean that it's like a Veshet when it comes to the dinim of Shrita. It's two completely different things. And therefore, when it comes to the Shrita, it's really not considered to be a Malkum Shrita. And Afal Pikin, Rav said that the Shir is b'mashu, because, look, the Kana is Bein b'mokum shrita, Bein shelo b'mokum shrita, has the same shear. It's a din in a psul in the kana of a psuka. Doesn't matter whether this is the mokum shrita or not. The same thing is true, as Rashi points out in the Veshet. The Veshet is always, whether it's the correct place of shrita of the Veshet or it's not, it still has the same din, and it's considered to be b'mashu. And therefore, it was entirely a psak like Rav. So that clarifies the sugya with which we have to begin today, because it means that all the discussion that we had about what is considered to be the Malkum Shrita Lagabi the Kone, we have to figure out the equivalent din in the question of what is considered to be the Malkum Shrita for the Veshet. Until now we thought that there was no shiur and that the entire Veshet is fine. Now it turns out that, that is not what Rav had said at all. Therefore, today the Gemara asks, what indeed is that shir? So that's where we're up to in the Gemara. When the Gemara is asking, Lemala at Kama, we're going to ask how much is the shir of the Veshet towards the top of the neck, and how much is the shir of the Veshet towards the bottom. So that's, we got up to, it's about two lines up from the middle of the daf. The mala at kama is where we're up to on mem dalet amud aleph. So we're going to start with at the upper point, the mala at kama. So what's the upper point that the veshet is considered to still be kosher l'shchita, since the chachamim were nosin shiur? What is that shiur? Omer Nachman ad k'dei tvisat yad. It's as much point that you can do shchita up until it takes to be able to hold the veshet from its top. Now, that's a very big machlokas what the shear is over here, because Rashi brings even a couple of possibilities. Is it considered to be kama etzba'ot, maybe shalash etzba'ot, arba etzba'ot? Others learn that adarabba means that the absolute minimal area that you could still hold something. And there's a number of different other shitas in between. Lamaisa, we end up, of course, being machmir, and all the way up until Tvisas Yad, like Rashi, is Amata at kama. And how about as you get down towards the stomach? I shouldn't say stomach, because technically speaking, the stomach is the keva. But how much towards the rumen, towards the keres? So there, the shear is Amata at kama, Omer Nachman, Omer Rabban Baravua. The shear Lamata is at Kadesh Yasir, the place where the inside becomes the kana. The inside of the kana becomes covered with cilia, and that's close to the rumen itself, because there's cilia lining that area. Actually, some of the Rishonim bring that not all animals have cilia, but there's always folding of the surface that makes it feel as if there's actual hair. So some learned that that's what the meaning of is ad kadesh yasir. But in any event, once it gets to that point, then that's already considered to be the inside of the keres. How could that be, says the Gemara? The Amar Avinu Amar Gneiva Mishmei Derav Tefach Veveshet Samuch Lecheres Zeu Keres Hapnimi. This is supposedly Rav said that the last tefach of the veshet, as it gets close to the keres, which is way above that, I mean, if that's called keres, then how can you possibly say that you could shift all the way down into that area up at the place where it becomes filled with cilia? That would be in the middle of the keres. And over here, Rav is claiming that tefach, the entire tefach, close to the opening of the keres is called, remember we had the pagam of the keres hapnimi, we said we're going to try to figure out the Gemara, what is the keres hapnimi and what is the keres hachitzum, but anyway, this is our first shita that we've seen so far, defining the keres hapnimi, that it's the tefach, which is in the veshet, closest to the keres. So, well, but that includes areas that are above even where Makom Sheyasir, and if that's the case, then Rav would have been saying, you giving a shear that you can shecht even in an area that has a din of the keres hapnimi, which is ridiculous, of course. You can't shecht in the keres, you can only shecht in the veshet. So how could it say that? If you're going to say that you could go all the way down to there, to Ad Makom Sheyasir, so then you're shechting in the actual area of the rumen. So how could you call that a Makom Shechita? No, that was a misquote. And Ema Tefach Becheres Somach LeVeshet Zeu Keres Hapnimi. Not the Tefach of the Veshet Somach to the Keres, but the Tefach of the Keres Somach to the Veshet. That was the keres hapnimi. Then above that, you have a mokum that's roi for shchita, as long as it's not covered with cilia. Okay, so that answers that. But there's another possibility. Maybe Rav, when he said you can shecht up to the cilia, he was referring to a shor. And a shor is a very large animal, and the cilia there extend much further up in the veshet, and because of that, it would mean that the mokum that he's giving you is actually well above the tefach that was, even if we held the first way of learning Rav, well above the tefach of the veshet samuch lekeres, because in a shor, it might be two tefachim high of cilia, and therefore you would only be able to shecht far above the place which is the Tefach Samuch Lekera. So we have those possibilities. So here, getting into some of the curious issues that we had raised earlier about Rashi's understanding of the simonim that were nekru, this Gemara is going to give us some additional material to think about, because what it says over here is that, at least what Shmuel said, is that a turbatz havesh shenital kulo milechi kasher. So let's say the entire turbatz havesh was separated from the jaw. Now, it says over here that according to Shmuel, that's kosher. And it seems to be very clear from the Tan of the Mishnah that's going to follow. It's the end of this Mishnah, really, later on, is the opposite of this Mishnah, the things that are kosher. And there, Tanatuna, Nita Lechi Atachton Kasher, which seems unbelievable. It says if the lower jaw is missing, then it's still going to be kosher. Now, obviously, the problem is, Matki Flor of Papa, how the heck could that be kosher if that was the classic description of Ikur Simanim? These are where we have the not, forget about whether it's a trefa, it can't be shechted. There's no heter for it if it was disconnected. And if you're telling me that there was no lower jaw, so for God's sake, I mean, so then it's completely nekar. So how is, something's wrong over here. I mean, obviously, you can't ask this only on Shmuel, because the Mishnah says the same thing later. So we've got some misunderstanding of what it was that Rav Papa is saying about Ikur Simanim. How are you going to explain that? So, Ikur Simanim. So ask the Gemara, wait a second. Why is Rav Papa attacking Shmuel? I mean, what about the Mishnah? Shmuel, I mean, basically we said Tana Tuna, that the Mishnah that follows this Mishnah says that Nita Lechi HaTachton Kasher. So what's the problem with Shmuel? Well, wait a minute. It's not exactly the same. If you analyze carefully the difference in the language, there's a big difference between them. Because Bishlam Amat Nitin, the Mishnah itself, according to Rav Papa, doesn't present any problems. Because basically, you could say that it's not the same as what Shmuel said. Because the case, you could say, that actually, Hadi Yakari Kure, Hadi Igamigume, Mi Luisimani. So there's a difference where you have actual, the jaw was in fact missing, but it wasn't ripped out together with the connective tissues that hold the simanim to the jaw. The connective tissue was left, and then you carefully separated between the connective tissue under the jaw and removed the jaw, which means that the simonim are still linked to the tissue that held them in place anyway when they were mechuber to the lech. So all that you're missing now over here is the jaw bone. So that's not such a problem. But according to Shmuel, it's a major problem, because the way that Shmuel said it is very, very different. Look at the lashon of Shmuel. Turbatz haveshet shenital kulo milechi kosher. You took off the entire turbatz haveshet off of the lechi. Masha Inken, the case that we had in the Mishnah, was that the lechi was removed. So if the lechi was removed, you could say it means it left the connective tissue. So that's not a problem. But the problem for Shmuel, that we have a classic case of Ikur Simanim, is unbelievable. Like Rav Papa said, how can you possibly be matir an animal that cannot be shechted? Well, apparently we read it wrong. What Shmuel had actually said was not shenital kula. He didn't say that if you took the entire turbatz haveshet off. He said if rubo, if most of it was detached, that it would be kosher. But eino chinami, if all of it was detached, it would be puzzle. What's the difference? What's the difference, mostly or all? It's the same halacha. Remember Shev Shmaitza? Do you remember Chef Schmeitzer? Well, one of those very important Chef Schmeitzer. We had, remember, Rabbi Bar Bar Chana, Amar Shmuel, that Simonim Shenidal Delu Berubon Trefa, even if it's just rove. And rove of the Simonim were Nidaldel and they're not properly attached. It's a trefa. So how are you helping the situation by telling me that the Torpet Saveshet over here wasn't entirely detached? I mean, so what? Even if it's rove, it was Shmuel himself that said that it would be considered to be a trefa. So how could we square those two things? Omrif Shisha Bereder Vidi, it depends how it was removed. There's a difference. When we said what Rav Nachman said, that Shmuel held that it's considered to be a not a treif and it's kosher, even if most of the Torpetz HaVeshet was nital, that's referring to where you pulled it off carefully. So you peeled it, basically. So if you were kapel ikpule, which is the same idea of kalaf, as Rashi points out, so kalaf, kapel, there ain't nothing on me. You've got everything, you have rove of it that you is in one place. Miut is in another place, but you don't have like little portions of connective tissue that are holding it together in different places. But what Rabbi Bar Bar Chana said in Chef Schmeitzer, according to Shmuel, over there it said that if it was nedaldel, it becomes a trefa. That's talking about where it was ipareki paruki. That's where it was ripped. And so it didn't pull off completely. But when you rip it, you have like little pieces of connective tissue that remain in different places. But you don't have one place where you have a continuous piece of chibur. And therefore, the pulling on it itself is very damaging in that fashion, and it's never going to be ivri. It's never going to be healed. So because of that, we're going to see that it's a klal in inyanim of trefa, that where damage is done that is not fixable, and instead it continues to weaken, then it's considered as if that weakening has already taken place. So if you know that there's going to be a hole that's developing here, it's as if that hole is here. And in this case, if it was nedaldo through a rip, through iparuki paruki, then it's never going to heal. Because of that, it's considered to be simanin shanidaldo. Okay, let's move on to the next piece in the Mishnah, which says psukat agargeret. Now, the question is, how do you measure the psukat hagargeret? What's the shear? It's not a hole. It's a psuka. So remember, psuka always is defined by rov. So if the rov was psuka, then it's considered to be a trefa. I just want to point out to you before we get to this, the question is it a trefa or is it not shechtable? And this was the question that Moshe Endel had raised originally all the way back on Daf Tet, which we've discussed numerous times. Tosfos keeps bringing it up. And here we have exactly this question being raised again. Because remember that, as Moshe Endel pointed out back on Daf Tet, that Rashi said that the Yikra Simonim over there makes it a trefa. But there he was referring to a case where you used a tzak in peguma, and he called that an example of Ikar Simanim, which is only a trefa. But the question is that then afterwards that we find that there's certainly considered if it's not mechubar, so then that type of Ikar Simanim would be non-shechtable. And in fact, the Taisas, together with the Psak of the Bahag, and so on. And there are even Rishonim who say that they heard from Rashi that he changed his mind, and that it's actually both of them, even if it was Ikar Simanim through a Sakin Paguma, is a Pagam in the Shrita, and is therefore considered to be not a Trefa, but is considered to be a non-shechtable animal Bichlal. So, okay, there's a lot, as I said, a lot of discussion about what exactly it's considered to be. So if ikur is in fact a shchita psula, then it would mean that this animal, if you did shecht it, would be metame kinevela. It would not be a trefa shenishchata at all. So therefore, if Shmuel says that it's a trefa, so then what he's saying is it's only a trefa, and it's not considered to be a true case of ikur simonim. It's considered to be the equivalent of the psukas hagargeres. There's many, many machlokas in over here, and there's like whole articles that have been written about this. The Avnei Nezer has all chelek, of which he describes all of the different shitas, because it's so complex, when to define the ikur as a trefa that is not metamik and nevela, and when to refine it as mamish and nevela. And you see that this gemara is mamish nogea, that because it asks about the connection between the simonim shel nedaldalu and the question of ikur simonim. But anyway, sorry, getting back now to the psukas hagargeres, where the shear of that psukas hagargeret we just said is a rove. Now the question is, gentlemen, how do we measure that rove? Because the question is the rove of the lumen, which is the rove of the empty space that we're talking about? So you're looking at the empty space. And then you just measure. If you've cut through most of that empty space, the halal, so then you've basically cut through most of the airway, which is the gargaris, the kana. But the other way of understanding it is that the kana is an organ, and it includes the outside of the kana. And as we saw, there's a lot of complex construction in the kana, because you have the various taba'ot, which surround the kana. Remember, we compared it to one of those drier vent kind of plastics with the metallic pieces going around it, which would be similar to the taba'ot. And remember that generally the taba'ot don't go all around, except for the taba'at ha'gdola, all the way on top. And what you do have is you have thick connective tissue towards the back of the neck where the cartilage stops, and instead there's connective tissue. Now, if you start in the front of the neck cutting, you have the thickening of the cartilage towards the front of the neck. So now, if you shecht from the front of the neck, and now you're cutting downwards, if it goes according to most of the kana, you might have shechted most of the kana, if you include the cartilage, before you shechted through most of the airway, because most of the kana would be elongated towards the front of the neck. Now, there's another way of understanding, which is that even the connective tissue would be considered to be part of the kana, and therefore most of the kana would be towards the back of the head, towards the orif. So there's a lot of machlokas about, I wish I could join you, my beloved. So there's a lot of machlokas about what we consider to be part of the kana. Is it just the cartilage? Is it the connective tissue? Is it actually part of even the tissues that are surrounding it? There's so many different shitas here. Obviously, with machmer, where we can be machmer, because sometimes this comes out to be very much of a kula, right? Because you can end up saying that, look, you know, you're not going to consider the rov halal. Even though you cut most of the airway, you're not going to consider that to be a real psukas hagargeres. So again, there's even machlokas in whether do we look for this only where it's a chumra to go according to the approach that the rov would be even before the rov achal, or even where it's a kula, which depends where you're shefted from, obviously, and which parts of the kana you're including. Rashi is very unhelpful with this because he seems to contradict himself in numerous ways across the sugya. And as I told you, just about any way that you can figure the area that is included within the measurement of the psukas hagargeres, somebody says that shot. So take that into consideration. Okay. So kama ruba. So Rav says, well, it means rov ovya. Most of the thickness, which does not look at the area of the airway necessarily, But you would even, assuming that we take the simplest approach, which is that only the cartilage is included, so then most of the cartilage is, of course, towards the front of the neck. The back of the neck only has connective tissue around these tabaot, and therefore it would be a trepha before you get through most of the airspace. Whereas others say that what Rav said was rov chalala, that the only thing that's important is to cut through most of the airway, in which case that would be a big kula, because even if you cut through most of the entirety, including the cartilage, if you haven't gotten through most of the chalal, so then it would still be kosher. And in fact, it once happened that there was a psukas hagargeret that was brought to Rav himself, to Paskin. And here, we have these two lishenas over here in the Rav. Is it rov chalala, or is it talking about the rov of the entire organ? So there was once a time that there was an animal that had a cut kone, and they brought it to Rav to see whether it was rov. And he was about to paskin, based on rov ovya, that most of it had been cut, and that therefore was a trefa. And Rav Kahan and Rav Asi were there, and they said, wait a minute. Don't paskin that that's a trefa. You taught us that we're supposed to measure with rov chalala. It hasn't gotten to rov chalala yet. Now, Rav himself did not want to paskin on that basis, so he sent it to Rabba Bar Bar Chana to see how Rabba Bar Bar Chana would paskin. Rabba Bar Bar Chana paskined it according to the kula, and he checked it rov chalala, and it had not cut most of the airway, and therefore he said it's kosher. And Zovan Minen, he himself went to buy, to show people they have nothing to worry about, and he bought 13 istirot, the common istirot worth of this meat. So this, the typical sela that we have over here is the one that they use. It's only 1/8 the value of sela tzuri, but it still is a significant amount of money, and he wanted people to see that you can buy this, and it's perfectly kosher. What? How is he allowed?
It's a cut of meat that's called a medallion, so that's very cute. Right, a steak medallion. So he got 8 medallions of meat.
Yeah. Oh, very nice. Maybe it's based on this Gemara. Anyway, the problem is, how could Rabba Bar Bar Chana be matir the animal if Rav held that it was usher? Don't we learn that Chacham Shetimei in Chaveiro Rashai L'Taher, Chacham She'asar in Chaveiro Rashai L'Hatir? So the halacha is that unless somebody mamish made a mistake and he was taught Bidvar Mishnah, and he was talking about his Shikol Hadas and something, once he made that psak, you're not allowed to go and say, I disagree, and you should listen to my psak. And so once a person has the Shaila by that Talmud Chacham, how could Rabba Bar Bar Chana paskin otherwise? Oh, come on. Rav himself said, I don't want to say that it's also. They stopped him. Rav Kahana said, hey, wait a minute. So he didn't paskin. So Rav lost on me. So Rav never said it was also. He was looking at it and measuring it in a way that implied he was about to say it's also. Then everybody ganged up on him and said, well, wait a minute. So he sent it to Rabba Bar Bar Chana. And obviously, if he sent it to Rabba Bar Bar Chana, Rabba Bar Bar Chana can do what he sees fit. You know, big deal. V'kimon da'ori b'chachamu. Wait a minute. How did Rabba Bar Bar Chana eat it? It says that he bought this medallion steak. How did he do that if it was only kosher because he paskined? But you're not... Remember, we had that whole story about Yechezkel before, and we get back to it again over here, where HaKadosh Baruch Hu told Yechezkel to eat from that disgusting bread and to show Klal Yisrael the terrible state that they're in. And he said, V'omar, aha, Hashem Elokim, hinei nafshi lo metuma, v'nevela v'treifa lo achalti minurai v'adata, v'lo bava pi boser pigol. Now remember, I mean, that's ridiculous. Yechezkel Anavi is saying, like, the great madriga that he has, that he didn't eat things that were usher b'achila to every Tom, Dick, and Harry. So remember the way we explained it before, that these are remazim to very special hanhogas of Yechezkel Hanavi. So we understood. Enaf shilo metuma means shilo yirhar to be yom lo voliday tuma balayla. So it meant that I never fantasized, and therefore I never had wet dreams. That's how some learn, or that he literally had never been Raya Keri, which is one way of saying, okay, so he was very special. But the other is, remember, as we said before, is that he can still say that he did his best not to fantasize, and that means that even though nobody's allowed to fantasize, but as Tosva says, since everybody does, because there's Shlosha Dvorim Ein Adam Nitzal Mehem, so because of that, used that as a unique hanaga. Okay, we talked about that before. Nivelavitre follow achalti. What does that mean? It means shelo achalti boser kos miolam. I never ate from a misukenet where people are shouting, shechter, why you can? And the other lobab fi basar pigo means shelo achalti bibe mashora bachacham. I never would eat from an animal that required a psak halacha because there was obviously some serious doubts and you had to go and get a psak. So here he had to give a psak. So how did he go and eat from it? Even though it was completely kosher, but I mean, did you see that it's inappropriate for a person in the high madriga to do that? So why did Rabbi Bar Bar Chana buy from an animal, even though he was the one that had paskin, but so what? It still required a psak of a chacham. He shouldn't have eaten it. Yes, but that's only ani mila milta detalya bisfara. Something that the Talmud Chacham uses is judgment time. So it's a judgment call. There's many, many things in Dreyfus that are judgment call. Does this look like it's similar to the type of pagam that you find somewhere else? And we're going to see a lot of cases like that, which Rashi mentions over here. So something like that, we have to figure out your own svara. A judgment call, you don't want to eat something that is a judgment call because you want to eat something that was without any kind of doubts. But over here, Rabbi Bar Bar Chana was not doing something that was based on his judgment. This is the way that he had been makabel the halacha, that you measure the rov according to the halal. So what's the problem? It's a straightforward halacha. He measured it, and it wasn't rov, so it was kosher. Okay, but still, typically mishum chashada, I mean, it looks very ugly, doesn't it? I mean, people are going to say that maybe, you know, the butcher gave him a good deal because he gave a psak that it's kosher, you know. Oh, it's a butcher, yeah, here, take it. So how can you do that? People will say that he did it to get some kind of benefit. After all, the Tanya Dana Tadin, somebody paskin the halacha about, let's say, who owns a field. When he rules to this guy and against the other guy. Or something that was a question, is he allowed to eat his tummy or tar? Or he said something is mutter, or something is usser, or witnesses that said something belongs to this guy, or any of the above cases. They're all allowed to buy. Because, I mean, look, the din is the way they paskin. But the Chachomim said it's very inappropriate. It's like insider trading. Archek min hakiur u min adomela. Don't do anything that people will say, oh, he paskin that it was kosher in order for him to get a special deal, or anything like that. So Rabbi Bar Bar Chana should not have bought any of it just because people will talk. Yeah. That's only where we're talking about a type of thing that, let's say, a field. So you paskin, this field belongs to this guy. Now, nobody knows precisely what is it worth. I mean, it's an appraisal. As anybody who deals with real estate knows, you get whatever appraisal you want. So they don't know. What is it really worth? I don't know. So, okay, so then everybody's going to say, well, it was appraised at $500 a square inch, but, yeah, sure. That's because he gave him a special deal. Go prove it. So anything like that, you're right. It's very inappropriate. But over here, it's by weight. The prices are paskin by weight, and they weighed it out for him. So how could anybody say that he's getting a special deal? Like we had a miser like this, that Rava, remember, it's very dangerous when you marry the daughter of a Talmud Chacham, you know. So Rava, he married Bas Rav Chisda. You know, they always used to call his wife Bas Rav Chisda. I can tell you, very dangerous marrying the wife of a mashgiach. Oh my gosh. But anyway, the point is that he was mater a treifa, and then he bought meat. And of course, Bas Rav Chisda came shouting at him, "What? My father would never do something like that. My father was mater a bechor, and he refused to eat any of the meat." So Rav explained to her, "Yes, of course, a bechor is not allowed to be weighed, right? So everybody's going to say, oh, you know, he gave him a pound that was really a pound and a half. So this looks like a pound, yeah, sure. So he probably did that because he was mater the bechor. You know, it said this is a mum. You know, okay, your father was correct and not buying. But over here, there it's ashuma mizdavan. It's only approximate. You're not allowed to weigh a bechor. Mashenke nahocha matke v'muchach. The weight is clear on the scale. And it's like in big letters. Everybody sees it. They do that in all the butcher shop. So what are you going to tell you now? Mayika, what's inappropriate about it? The fact that they give me the best part of the meat, they do that every day. Makes absolutely no, they just do that for my honor. So if I come in there, I get the best meat. So Mayika mishun umtzim al yata. Call you umtzim al yata zab. And they always get the best anyway. So therefore, there's no reason to view this as inappropriate. Omrev Chist, you know, who can be called a Talmud Chochem in terms of what? Tosis explains, remember there's a halacha that if you're a Talmud Chochem, then you're neman to say that you have a tfias ayin in an aveda. This is mine. Very often, you can't give a objective simon. So a regular person that we don't trust has got to give an objective simon in order for you to be allowed to give him the thing back, because you can only give it back to the owner. But to a Talmud Chochem, who is never choshed on lying, if he says, this is mine, so you give it to him. So who would be considered to be a Talmud Chochem who is above lying for financial benefit? Ezel Tomit Chacham Zvay Tosef explains the question. Somebody who had his own animal, had a Suffolk treifus in it, and he paskened that it's not kosher, even though there were grounds to say it was kosher, and it was like a difficult call, and he called it and took a tremendous loss. The Omer of Chistah, Ezel Sonei Matanot Yechyeh. What does it mean when you say you're a Sonei Matanot? He says, Rei HaTreif Falatzma, look, you can always find someone or other who's going to be moderate, you know. You got to know who to ask about these things, as everybody knows. This guy, he holds a treifa, and he paskens that it's a treifa. Don't do me any favors. So that's somebody who hates gifts. He's roya treifa liatzma. In Dorish Marzutra, Mishmeder of Krista, call me if you have a person who's learned chumash, and he's learned Mishnah, and he's able to pasken a din of treifas for himself and take the loss. And then he's mishamish damir zachomim, so that he knows how to understand the Mishnayos, the steeris in the Mishnayos, the steeris in Svaras, and he's able to learn and understand, to give a hira. Alava katuv omer, yagia kapecha titochel, ashrecha v'tovlach. Someone who is able to live off of his own hand's labor is happy and is good for him. What does that mean? Zochev and ochel shnei olamot. Olam hazeh, olam haba. It's a remez here in the Pasuk of ashrecha v'tovlach is a remez to two different phases of life. Ashrecha b'olam hazeh, you're not dependent on anyone, and you have a full life, which will be proud of yourself without needing to come on to anyone else. V'tovlach l'olam haba. And this is something that makes sure, since you're able to take care of yourself, you're not going to come the day faking out, being nakel, and taking things that you're not allowed to eat or stealing from other people, and therefore you'll be zocha to tovlach in olam haba, because there won't be any kitruk against you. Rabbi Elazar, ki havi mishadri li mibei nesi amidi, lo shakim. And they would send, Rabbi Elazar was very chashuv, so they would often they would send from the Nasi. Remember, the Nasi was the head of the whole community in Eretz Yisrael. So they would send to the Gedolei Torah, Rabbi Elazar, very like a manais to eat and so on. He wouldn't accept it. And if they invited him to a meal, he refused to go. And he would say to them, Amar, look, boy, Mar, that you say, you don't want me to live? What are you trying to do? Knock me off by giving me these invitations and these gifts? It says, so Neimatanot Yechye. I'm beginning to suspect that you're trying to knock me off. So that's why I'm not accepting. Whereas Rabbi Zeira had a different take on it. Rabbi Zeira, if they would send him a present of some kind, he would not accept. But if they would invite him to the house, he would go to the house because he would say, they're not doing that for me. They're doing that for themselves. It's a very big covet for them that I come to their house. So they're being mechabed themselves. So fine. Ityakuri yudim is yakrabe. You know, so they have the chashivas of having Richie as a guest. I mean, that's no pashut. And because of that, he would definitely accept an invitation when that came up. Wow. Okay, Rabbosai. Oh. Beautiful. Okay, you better get yourselves your white dissecting uniforms for tomorrow. Make sure you got your scalpels and whatever else is necessary. Doc is going to be leading the issues tomorrow. And maybe you could bring us in a couple of hearts to take apart, Doc, and we'll be looking into these complex sugyas tomorrow. So things were pretty clear tonight, I think, Baruch Hashem. Things get a little bit more complex tomorrow, but that's the way the connect rumbles. See you, everybody. Shavua Tov u'mevorach. It is wonderful seeing you, and I missed you very much over Shabbos. So, kol tov.
Hinei
el Yeshua si eftach, lo eftach. Kelziv zimrat yad mai va'yilil Yeshua. Okay, amen, amen.